When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
The curse is over, but here on Post Show Recaps, we are just getting started. My name is Grace. Of course, I'm not alone. I'm here with Dr. Amanda. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Grace. I'm just like, my head is in the clouds. I'm floating. I'm walking on air.
I'm walking on the ceiling. Yeah, we knew we had to come back. Lots of people being like, I think you just need to talk about this more. We said at the end of the True Detective recap this week that you said, yeah, we pondered on it. Or we ruminated, I think, maybe. I can't remember which verb you used. Said, yeah, I don't think it's going to take this 1 hour to be able to just finish ruminating on this. Like, I'll think about this for the rest of my life, this show.
Yeah. How often do you have one of those episodes of television, like, I do really feel like, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about what the general reaction was to The Curse when we first recorded our finale recap. Like, not everybody had seen it yet because of the weird way that The Curse gets released, like with some of, with it being released on streaming on a Friday and then on Showtime on a Sunday. And so now I think enough time has passed that we've sort of seen the general reaction. Nobody was meh on this, Grace. Everybody had a very strong reaction.
Yeah, nobody was like, huh, and then turned off their TV. My dad would have done that. No, my dad would have hated this show. But yeah, very polarizing reactions. I believe, is it Vanity Fair?
Yes.
That it's basically that it was abysmal. So, you know, I think this is the first show. I think I said this. We were chatting a little bit. Behind the scenes, Josh Wigler, and I'll give you Josh Wigler's recap. He has interviewed Benny Safdie. I think it's somewhere around the middle of the show. The interview came out in December. I'm just trying to find his comment, which is, please pass along that I love the show and I'm still laughing about flying Nathan Fielder. So passing on Josh Wigler's thoughts, who, when he watched the finale, just messaged, wow. No, he said, what on earth? And they said, or I guess, what not on earth? Yeah,
it was not on earth. Exactly. Yes. But Josh's erstwhile podcast co-host over at the Vanity Fair feed, Richard Lawson, says The Curse was a great show until that terrible finale. And that's definitely a sentiment that I've seen, you know, that he's not alone, that people feel like people had mixed feelings about The Curse going all the way through. I think a lot of people wanted to see how Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie were going to land that plane, or rather shoot it into space. And like, it was definitely a harsh shift from the sort of tone and the universe that was set up in the previous 9 episodes. So some people felt like it was kind of like tagged on as like a troll to the audience.
This is Nick's response is, I don't think I like that. I'm not going to say it ruined the show for me, but it really feels dissonant with the entire rest of the show. To me, it almost feels like there were 9 good episodes of one show and then the network made them tack on a 10th and they didn't know what to do. So they just went completely off the deep end absurd. I think episode 9 would have been a great place to end the show and sort of wish this either just didn't happen or it was a non-canon bonus episode. And for what it means, yeah, we can get into it. But yeah, some people really didn't like it. And this is the first show, this is what I was going to say about our conversation with Josh, that I feel so pretentious liking the show. When people do say, like, I didn't like it, I'm like, well, you don't understand art, so And I,
you're such a Whitney, Grace.
That's not how I really feel, but it is hard. I think when you like, I honestly think I have very boring takes, Amanda. Like I like an array of stuff. Like I'm a big pro wrestling fan. I know that pro wrestling is not for everybody, but I think within the world of pro wrestling, I think I have like these like pretty like bland takes. So, you know, I sometimes feel like, and I don't dislike a lot of things. I don't actively watch a lot of stuff to like, be like, yeah, that wasn't very good. I do try honestly to, and most of the time I just like, oh yeah, it was fine. I don't mind. This I'm like, I don't understand how people don't like it, but they didn't. It's not, and I don't care that they did, but I'm like, I thought it was so smart.
We've definitely been proponents of this show from the start. I think we both, it appeals to both of our sensibilities for whatever reason, whatever that says about us. I loved it. I think it's very smart. I think it's very provocative and interesting. I fully understand why people don't like this show, because I don't think it's an easy show to watch. I think that it's visually somewhat jarring. I think the characters are extremely unlikable. You know, we talked a little bit about that line between cringe comedy and just cringe. And the comedy is very dark, and I know it's not for everybody. So, you know, I can understand the reaction that, you know, this show wasn't for you. Nathan, for if you're a fan of Nathan for you, and this show might not have been for you.
I've been watching more Nathan from you, and boy, that show is very good. I have to.
It's for you.
It is for me. Yeah.
But the thing that I do want to tackle, because we're, you know, talking about now this piece as a whole, and I've heard it, you know, I've seen the feedback in the Discord and stuff from some other people that I've spoken to. I've seen this in some of the critical reception, is that this ending didn't fit. It felt tacked on. It was either like the piece of feedback that you just read. I'm sorry, Grace. Who was that from?
That was from Nick. Yeah.
From Nick, that like they had a great 9-episode series and then they tacked this on. I've also seen the take that like Nathan Fielder and Benny Zofty were trying to do a gotcha with the audience, that like it's a little bit of what can they get away with.
Yeah, so Softy has done an Andy Kaufman documentary, and Andy Kaufman is probably the most absurdist comedian, maybe not ever, but maybe one of the most like artistic, like when he died, people being like, maybe he's not really dead, maybe he faked his own death. Like he would just, there's a sketch I absolutely love. Have you ever seen the late night sketch where Andy Kaufman just plays a record? Have you seen
the Mighty Mouse? Here I come to save the day.
It's genius. I love it. But I can also see that people would be like, you've wasted my time. But I think that the question is, and I think I said this basically on the last episode, of like, what if they just were like, what's the weirdest thing we can do? And let's see how people react and what they think. And then I'm standing here being like, it's art. And they're like, no, it's not art. I just thought it'd be really funny if he flew into space. And I'm like, yeah, but it's art. It's art.
And the joke's on you for thinking it's art. I mean, I definitely think there's a Kafka-esque dimension, not Kafka-esque, Kaufman-esque. Yeah. There's really both.
It could be. But yeah,
there's a Kaufman-esque dimension to both of these artists, and Nathan Fielder and Benny Zofty. And part of what Andy Kaufman did so brilliantly is it was funny that he played the Mighty Mouse record.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, if you were an audience member, you were part of the joke, that you had paid to sit there and watch this happen. And like the humor comes from telling somebody about it later, explaining the fact that it happened, but you were not entertained in the way that you expected to be. You know, sometimes you have to go to great lengths to get your point across, is something that Asher says in the finale episode. So I definitely think that there is an Andy Kaufman read of this show, like kind of involving the audience member as part of the joke. I still think that that is smart and intentional. And I think that there's other ways to read this, so it's not only a troll on the audience, but I think that you're really smart to bring that up, Grace. I personally am like a huge fan of Andy Kaufman and find his body of work fascinating. But again, somebody who was not easy to watch, who was not very likable, who, you know, started fights with who was the wrestler he started
Jerry the King Lawler. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he would. He was Andy Kaufman was the women's champion or the women's wrestling champion of the world.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he would fight women. They would come in and they were all plants, obviously, and he would beat them. And then he claimed he was the best wrestler in the world because he could beat all these women. And then when a man would fight, and it's a whole like he's a bad guy shtick in wrestling. But yeah, he's often called like an anti-comedian of like the whole right. He's like the idea of comedy is to be surprised. And he would take that to the like the most, you know, he'd take that to the nth degree, and you know it's so not a joke that then it's a joke, like
right,
you know. Yeah. Yeah, so that, yeah, I think the do you think this has any chance? So the Emmys just happened the other night with Tanya Starks and I recap, as opposed to the Creative Emmys, which happened a few weeks earlier. I don't know if you caught them.
Which more, everybody knows that.
Everybody knows it's everybody the Creative Emmys.
Everybody understands that it's two different nights and it's the same thing. And nobody would make that mistake.
No. Yeah, no.
Especially a smart television podcaster.
Yeah, so it's fun. And and this is the most inside joke you've ever been. And I almost don't want to explain it. In honor of Andy Kaufman, I shall not explain that joke. But do you think this has any shot in terms of critical reception? Is there a world where anything from the show gets nominated, which presumably the Emmy story will be this September?
Well, what I learned about the Emmys from this last round is that people watch three shows. They only have the capacity to watch three shows. And I don't know if this is going to end up on the short list of those three shows that are Emmy darlings. I would be really fascinated if this broke through. I mean, the rehearsal did not, Grace. Did the rehearsal get any love?
No. There's one. There's, I think, like, in terms of, like, main awards, I think that it certainly could, like, you know, something like writing or something. I could see
Emma
it like,
Stone.
Yes. Emma Stone is the one who I think I would certainly not be surprised to see her nominated and win in, lead actress in a limited series next year. It really, the limited thing is hard because like there's could be a bunch of, where do you put this? Like Beef was the bear was a comedy. I mean, so where do you put this?
Is she, I mean, if this is a limited anthology, is she going to go up against Jodie Foster and Callie Reyes who are in True Detective that we're talking about now? Yeah. I mean, I don't think that this is anything like a shoe-in. I do think we might see some nominations for this, especially an Emma Stone as in the best actress category.
Yeah. So that's the only thing I think I can see. Other than like down the line categories, I certainly could see it. But all right. Well, I've pondered for a week now, more than a week, I guess, at this point, about what happened. And I've listened to a lot of pods and I've read a lot. And I feel like I think I know what happened. I don't think anybody should be able to say with 100% certainty that they know what happened. Do you feel like you have a good, like, are you settled in on a particular theory about what happened, Amanda?
We talked about this. I think we've talked about this recently, and we definitely talked about this when we podcasted about Succession. But I think that, you know, the idea that there's one explanation for you know, a given character's behavior or something that happens. I think that, you know, a lot of these more prestige shows and the best art sort of leaves room for, you know, this is one possible explanation. This is another possible explanation. It draws from these different elements. I have a couple of leading theories that would explain how the very, very surrealistic, you know, ending of Asher propelling, flying off into space. Like, I do have, I think, one or two thematic, conceptual ways that works as an ending. I do want to say, like, I can't wait to see. I haven't read any of Nathan Fielder or Benny Zofty's interviews since the finale has come out. I don't think there are any, Grace. I've looked pretty extensively.
Yeah, I know Med, who shared a theory, was showing that there were these live show interviews that were being released at the Lincoln Center, but I don't know that they've released one on the finale yet. I think they only had done them prior, I think. So, yeah, that's kind of fun that they're just like, don't do any press after the...
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like maybe 7 days ago, Benny Softy did maybe talk at the New York Film Festival, but that could have been pre-taped. So yeah, I don't know that there's been a ton of press since the finale.
So yeah, no. So I would love to like given that we haven't heard from the creators yet, like I kind of very strongly feel like there is an explanation in Benny Softy and Nathan Fielder's mind about why this happened. And to me, this doesn't feel tacked on. I wouldn't be surprised if they started with the idea, like, we want to tell a story about a man who gets propelled into space. Like, I wouldn't even be surprised if everything was leading up to something like this. Like, it feels like it makes sense. And I do think I have an idea of how it fits for me. But Grace, since you're so confident about whether or not to eat the turkey, I'd love to hear your take.
I can't believe I didn't get shaved turkey to eat on this podcast. So I think that the most important thing that indicates what happened is in the speech that Asher gives when he returns to the hotel room. And he says something along the lines of, if you wanted me to leave, I would know it. Deep down, I would know it and I would just leave. And it's in that moment that I think there's the potential that he cursed himself. Abshir tells him, the fear about curses is not that they're, you know, that they exist in the world. It's that if you start talking about them, you will start making yourself believe that they exist. You will. And so this is the most passionate we've ever seen Asher on the show, is the speech where maybe other than like defending, but even this moment he's defending Whitney, but he's giving this impassioned plea about why basically Whitney should not leave him. And that if you actually wanted me to leave, I would leave. Cut to episode 10. They've given Abshir the house. They're at home. Everything seems pretty fine. And Asher's talking to the baby and he's talking to the baby and says, there's a little me inside of you. And Whitney seems not happy about this.
Disgusted. Yeah.
Disgusted. And so in this moment, it's finally the moment that Whitney says, I don't actually really want to be with you. And so in that case, they go to bed. In the morning, Asher flies into space. He's obviously saved by the ceiling, but ultimately he's going to fly into space. He now knows he's put this thing in the world. They're like, if you don't want me, I'll leave. And that's the curse that has been put upon him, basically by himself, kind of by Whitney, who now knows, well, I don't want to be with you. Like deep inside of her, she knows. So that's what happens. He flies into space and he's gone. She no longer needs him.
Yeah. Excellent, Grace. I think that and we did have some speculation. I think Bram in the Discord also pointed this out, how salient it is that Asher says, if you wanted me gone, you wouldn't have to say it. I would just disappear. And he sort of in a very literal way, kind of just goes and flies out of the picture. So I think that definitely makes sense. And I think that fits. So the piece that that I was still grappling with was, there's really three protagonists here. And how does this ending speak to Whitney's arc? And how does this ending speak to Dougie's arc? I also was really interested in how this last act of giving Quest Elaine to Abshir fits into what eventually Asher's fate is. So I do think that it's interesting that this idea of doing it to yourself and becoming being the self-inflicted curse, Whitney tries to give Asher the message that she doesn't want to be with him. And instead of leaving, which is what he should have done, he tries to sort of transform himself into this good person that he imagines is what Whitney wants, not really seeing that Whitney herself is not a good person. She's really more of a hypocrite, and not seeing that his motivations, you can't be a good person to get a hot woman to stay your wife. That's not the right altruistic motivation. But he does it, and he sort of does it as well as he can. And we see the evidence of that by this gift that they give to Abshir. And it's the fact that it goes so wrong, or it doesn't go wrong, mm-hmm. but they didn't there's no paperwork. There's no all of this stuff. It's all this gesture. It's all like very surface level for show. And they're doing it to get like, you know, to take, just cut pieces off of him for their own amusement. Like they want to see this like big over the top display of gratitude. And I feel like that act symbolizes like the best that Asher could do to actually be wanted by Whitney. And even doing that, even doing the most he could possibly do, she still is disgusted by him and like doesn't want him. And that's like partially explains like the sequence events that leads to her cursing him and like sending him up into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
Now that bothered me somewhat because there's like a reading of the ending of like, this is a happy ending for Whitney. Like she gets what she wants, which is like freedom from Asher. She's the green queen. She has this, you know, show as feeble as it is. But I think that Whitney is also cursed because she has a little Asher inside of her. And now yeah. like Asher is like, I do think that there's a little bit of this theme of reincarnation and like the fact that she cynically stayed in this relationship and had this child like as this way to make herself more relatable to have this show. Like, I think that that's going to come, like that's going to kind of keep her cursed. And like, if Asher was the curse and the curse was inside of Whitney and she has this baby, is there a way that Whitney is still in possession of the curse?
Well, the thing is, I think curses aren't real unless you make them real. So if Whitney doesn't care about a curse, then potentially there's no curse. Whereas Dougie, when he's wailing on the ground, is like, clearly something has happened. He does believe. We learned there's no other way to explain the drunk driving accident right. than a curse.
That one time. That one time.
That one time that he happened to blow over the limit. Yeah, there was a lot of things about like, is Asher being punished? Like, is he paying for sins and Whitney's still there and Whitney is arguably worse than Asher, even if Asher isn't a great guy and Dougie's still around and Dougie's maybe not a great guy.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
I need to go.
Hang on. It is our time. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
But I think the laws of the show, you know, it's like, let the, you know, my classic, I'd like to quote Josh Wigler, which is let the show tell you what it is.
Yeah.
Which is that for the most part, if you are a bad person, it doesn't really matter if you're a bad person. Nobody really, what consequences came for them for actually being bad people, being a little bit like, what happened? Was there any consequence to them being a bad person over the course of the entire show? All the choices they make, where they like disrupt Espanola. Does anything bad actually happen to them? No, but these things that
Asher does fly into space, Grace.
But I don't think it's because he does bad things in Espanola. I don't think this is like punishment. I don't think this is like karmic, supernatural justice. This is, he believed in a curse so strongly, and so does Whitney, that like he is then cursed, and so this is what happens when you're cursed. But like nothing, they get the TV show. The TV show seems to be doing fine. They own all this property, enough that they can like give up a property, even if Whitney's not sure it will make them go broke. But you know, and I think Med sent in a theory about like how basically it's Asher who's the show was not about one curse. But if the show is about, if it was about one curse, it would be Asher. He's a curse to Whitney and therefore Espanola. And there's no separating him from Whitney, that it literally took a supernatural force to separate them. So now maybe Whitney can focus on the raising the baby and giving her the baby love that she can give to Asher. I don't, and maybe Dougie can change as a producer and treat people with more humanity. I don't think that's the read of the show. I think the read of the show is like, you can be pretty, there's a really great line from the Prestige TV podcast that says, I think it's Sean Fennessy says, part of the theme of the show is that people care more about being perceived as being good than actually doing good. I think that is tremendously true. I think that's like, you look at the way social media has affected like all of our brains, like the black square for Black Lives Matters. Like, what did you actually, what'd you do? Nothing. You put a black square hoping other people might do. And maybe you did something, maybe you donated, maybe you protested or whatever, but the one, the black square means nothing. It meant nothing to do that. I don't know. I don't.
But I think that the curse is, it's not just that they were bad to Española, because then you could look at Whitney's parents and what they've done in Santa Fe. I think that critical to why they are cursed and why I think that Whitney will continue to be cursed and why I think that Dougie will continue to be cursed is this hypocrisy, is the fact that they wanted to create this world with no losers. And because they are desperate to be perceived as good while also being very selfish and self-interested, is inherently a curse that they will not get out of until they actually accept their terribleness. And I think that there's a version of this where Asher, you know, recognizes that I am greedy, I am unkind, my wife wants to leave me, and he can step away from this and work at the casino and get people, you know, disabled people to sit there and spend all of their money, like, and just but allow, embrace who he actually is. And I think that the curse comes from the fact that he wants to be on camera giving a little girl $100 and then take it away when the cameras stop rolling. And I think that that's inherent in what the curse is. And I read this in the Daily Beast in this great recap by Nick Sager that said, you know, having painted a caustic portrait of two-faced phonies who mask their genuine thoughts and feelings behind bullshit smiles and proclamations of liberal allyship, it tears down those facades via unreal insanity in its closing episode, exposing Whitney, Asher, and Dougie for the woman and men they always were and diligently tried to hide. As both satire and character study, it takes no prisoners, and as a bizarro nightmare about the power of dreams, greed, curses, and spousal antipathy, it beguiles and astonishes like few recent big or small screen works. And like, I do think that it took me a while to get my head around the endings for Whitney and Dougie. And I think in a way, Whitney is freed from Asher, but Asher didn't leave when Whitney wanted him to leave. He left after he put a baby that's a little him inside of her.
And right. That's right. They're not pregnant. The time jump is like, yeah, now they're pregnant. That's right. That's true.
And so like, I think that if Whitney could accept, if she could take down this two-faced facade and allow herself to be seen as the self-centered person that she is, she would have said, no, Asher, you're wrong. I do want you to leave. I don't want to be married anymore. It's not worth the HGTV notes about the show. And then she would have been free of him. But because of this desire to be seen as, you know, a better person than she is, she's going to actually keep Asher in her life via the child that is born on the day that he flies into the stratosphere.
Well, I also, I think too, the piece of, and we think we talked about this in episode 10, is that the utility of Asher of being the thing. So like, yeah, when he comes back in the hotel room and is like, he's basically saying like, I will basically do whatever you want to make sure, like people need to see you. People need to know who you are. Right. The baby is like, you know, just as much work to, but also you get the benefits of having the baby is like, you know, to some degree, like, you know, more useful now than at, they already have the show. They have it. Also, there's a great thing about like, there's no way Whitney doesn't use like, my husband flew into space. It's like marketing material for whatever, right? Of like, no way she doesn't use this, right? As a thing moving forward. There's also a great debate on the Prestige Pod about, should we even care that it's a thing that could happen? Like, does it matter what will happen next after a man flies into space? Or are we living in this like surreal world? Whatever. It was very interesting.
It's very interesting.
But now Whitney has a baby that will give her TV ratings, and she'll be able to use the baby to like prop herself up to a degree. So it doesn't really need Asher anymore. I think the thing that you've the idea that they're like her and Dougie in particular are like still cursed, and why does all this stuff happen to them when like there's plenty of bad people in the world who don't get cursed? Yeah. The best thing for me that you've convinced me is like, why doesn't anything bad happen to her parents? But they're not hypocritical, and I think it is the theme of like, it's such a losing effort to constantly try to be good without actively trying to be good, you know? And I do feel like that's probably something that the two of that, like Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie, when they're writing the show of like, there's a movie that came out last year. I don't think I actually end up watching it, but it's about this girl who is she's faking that she's on a trip in Paris. And then there's a terrorist attack. And so people are like, oh my God, are you okay? And she keeps up the facade that she was like, there when it happened. There's like the, why do people say they had a relative in like 9/11, or like what good does that, what good, uh-huh. This is the guy from the league, right?
Yeah.
But like, yeah, the hypocrisy of like trying to get some sympathy, garner sympathy, attention for doing good without being willing to sacrifice any of the things that sometimes being good means. So I don't know. I don't know. Did we figure it out? We figured it out. Right?
I think we figured it out. Like, I looked and saw like the Ringer had four different theories that I read about with varying levels of seriousness. I think that they were written in somebody's notes app very late at night when they might have been high. But theory one was Asher becomes the curse and the curse is lifted. Theory two was Whitney gives birth to her reincarnated husband. I think that both of these things are sort of related. I do think, like, yeah. I don't think it's literal. I mean, I definitely think there's intentional idea that Asher is like, you know, that there is a little Asher that she will always have in a very real way, Asher with her because she had his baby. Theory three is Asher is a cat. And theory four is it was all the Matrix.
Oh, I don't like any of those series, basically. I don't think any of those are right. But I think, try. Yeah, Joanna Robinson or Sean, because that's the one I liked. I like their
podcast, I listened to most of that podcast. There have been some interesting parallels drawn between the visual of Nathan Fielder in the fetal position floating through space and Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think that there is some interesting parallels there that he is reborn an enhanced being, a star child, an angel, a Superman, if you like, and returns to the Earth prepared for the next leap forward of man's evolutionary destiny. That is right. That's what Kubrick said about his movie. So thinking of Asher as the star child here, that there was some thought that this is kind of his final form, cosmic insubstantiality and immaturity.
Okay, his final form. So he's not going to make any more TV. That's too bad. That's too
well,
bad.
He is. I think he. So I've seen some like scuttlebutt on Twitter that rehearsal season two might already be in the works. Somebody saw Nathan Fielder getting piloting instructions or doing training for his pilot's license.
It's pretty upsetting to me that this was on Showtime and not HBO, so that there's zero possibility that this has anything to do with the, I mean, like, clip this and quote it when like, yeah, basically that TV show I made was a rehearsal for, you know, whatever thing I'm trying to write, like space travel or whatever. But yeah, it's a little bit disappointing to me that they probably are so separate, because yeah, I'm intrigued. I mean, I said in episode 9, I said like, it maybe actually in episode 8, as we were like leading into the finale, and I was trying to theorize like, what is the finale of a show, and what have we learned from Nathan? What have we learned from Benny Safdie to give us any sort of indication of what the finale might be? I'm pretty surprised we couldn't guess that Nathan would fly into space, but you know, alas. So I guess now the question I ask is like, what did we learn from this? And what do we do? I'm never done watching Nathan Fielder shows.
Mm-hmm.
He has not yet. Yeah, but there's an episode of Nathan for You where, does he have to untie a, what's it called? Like a, straitjacket or his pants will be taken off in front of Chip. Yes. Like if I didn't stop watching Nathan, then I think I don't think this is going to stop me. So, and Softee has some works I think that I've seen rumored. I know that he's not working with his brother.
With his brother, yeah.
Moving forward, but I thought I saw an inkling of what he was working on next. But what do you make of like what does this tell us about them? And
yeah,
what would you be excited for them to do next? Well, either separately or together.
Yeah, I mean. It's interesting, and I don't know like what it says about like Nathan Fielder's body of work that like for even more than with other creators, I'm like very much trying to see what the through line is between his projects and like looking at this as a full body and like what statements he's making. And I think that, you know, it's not a coincidence that they chose this reality TV subject matter from a person who has done more of his work in reality TV, not working with scripted content, not working with actors, but rather using real people in many ways as marks. You know, so I was really trying to see how this show might have been grappling with Nathan Fielder in particular's relationship with what he's done in producing his prior works. And I think that there's like something. You know, there's definitely a few moments where I feel like there are connections. And we pointed out the thing he says about the producers and how sometimes you have to go to great lengths.
Yeah.
And people might not necessarily respond to it in its time. And this, that as a setup of what the show is about to do in terms of delivering like the type of finale that made half of the viewers say like that ruined the whole series for me is really interesting. But I also think it speaks to what he's done with the rehearsal and how he thinks about what he's doing in his unscripted content. And you pointed this out when we did the recap, but one of the more interesting moments is when we see what the neighbors, how the neighbors like synthesize what they just witnessed.
I feel like that was I was like, that feels so important. And I think somebody else in the Discord said, might've been Alex. I want to make sure. He says my take 3 minutes after finishing the episode, the last line from the neighbor struck me as maybe pretty important. Like for people in the entertainment world, what is real and what is fabricated? Even if you literally fly away or your world is turned upside down, it still may be entertainment to outside observers. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's really interesting. If we think about how, like, if I think about my immediate reaction after I finished the rehearsal, where I was like, there was part of me that was like, I just watched a real child be traumatized and confused about who his father is because it was a comedy show that was on HBO on Sunday night. And
that was way more horrifying than this. I have to admit the rehearsal is, I feel much more morally like unwell than I did after watching the curse.
And in a Kaufman-esque way, I think that what Nathan Fielder did was kind of push the boundaries of what the viewing public will accept as entertainment. And, you know, I mean, Black Mirror has delved into this, this territory before, but like, I definitely think that there was part of this that was a commentary on, you know, how cynically we view our fellow man because we're in a world where everything is content and we're used to, you know, looking at people's Instagrams or, you know, just how much this has morphed our perception of reality that you could literally watch a man fly up into space before your very eyes and think like, huh, oh, weird HGTV show.
Well, and also maybe it's something in the world in which like we, you know, I often feel like people must hate going to a movie with me because I'll be like, you know, how am I feeling about this movie? How does in the culture, in the larger cultural context, are we okay? You know, it's like, you just watch a movie, you know, why don't you just like,
you should just like, go to movies with me, Grace. Cause that's always what I'm thinking about. Like the broader culture.
I know. I'm like, what does that mean? That's a big idea, you know, or whatever, some filmmakers obviously want you to feel and think, and we do, but there is now this world where that's blended where, you know, like TikTok content of like what, and then what is real and what is fake. And like, what is performative and what's not, and what crosses a line into being like, if that's fake, it's okay. But if that's fake, it's not okay. And us constantly like there's this world that we live in right now that like feels like we almost know everything and we know nothing. Mm-hmm. Like you can look up any piece of information. Like you should see the tabs I open during an episode of a podcast because I'm like, well, better check to see if that fact is, you know, it's like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. Like some random disease page on a Wikipedia open, you know, or whatever. I don't know. But then also there's so much like, you know, anybody can put anything out into the world. I don't know. I'm getting really philosophical, but.
Well, I think that that's exactly like, I mean, if you don't like this kind of show, then it doesn't work for you. And I don't know why you're listening to the second podcast that we recorded about the finale of a show you don't like, but that's on you. But like, you know, I think that if this works for you, it's probably because you're at least to some extent engaging in that level. Like, and I do think that there's part of watching Nathan Fielder where you just think he's funny, but like he's so on the leading edge, I think, of what we're grappling with in regards to our relationship with what entertainment is. And it's powerful coming from him as the voice of that, I think, because he's, you know, no offense to Nathan Fielder and all the Nathan Fielder girlies out there, like he's not super attractive. He's not super charming. He's not watchable. Mm-hmm. He's hard to watch. And still, like, we watch it, I think, because it has a little bit more weight to it than what we're seeing. And I think, like the producers, like Andy Kaufman, it's like something that is a little bit ahead of its time. But that's why it's so exciting and why so many people can be completely befuddled by this finale.
Yeah, it feels like so topical, like it's commenting on something that's so pervasive in society right now that I don't know that I can like be like, and this is exactly how this thing is resonant, because it's like I'm too in it. I'm also in it. I'm in the whole thing. I'm every night before bed, I'm like, I'll just watch like 30 minutes of TikTok. And I'm like, you know, all of this, I'm watching like anything and everything. I'm like, you know, it's just, you know, anyway. Yeah. I love Nathan Fielder. I've been going back and watching Nathan for you. There's something very is about he's so plays the. I just watched the one where he tries to give the gas rebate.
Yes.
But then he comes back, and one of the guys had said he drinks pee, and then the guy's like, "Well, maybe you should drink my grandson's pee." And he's like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah. My grandma told me you should drink your grandson's pee." And he cannot believe that this man. He tried to make a joke about how somebody was going to drink their own pee to get the rebate, and then this man admits that he drinks his grandson's pee, and it is wild. But Nathan is just full like. He is the interesting part of this evolution of Nathan for you to the rehearsal to this is Nathan in the rehearsal inserts himself into it, right? That's like the big piece that's so different than what we had seen him do. He was such an observer of weird people, and then he inserted himself into the mix with all the weird people to catastrophic events where a child wants to call him daddy. And then in this, he's now acting. And so, but is he at, like, he is acting, but he's also trying to tell a story. And it's just like, this man is insane. And I love him. But I don't know. Maybe he shouldn't be allowed to make TV anymore. Maybe. But it's,
maybe he's the only one who should be allowed to make TV.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe he's trying to convince us that we should all stop watching TV.
Okay. Can I tell you? So Benny Softee's next. Teacher, which I think this is interesting. I'm like, what does he get drawn to after he does this?
Yeah,
which he is making a movie with The Rock for A24 about MMA fighter Mark Kerr. The thing that's interesting to me about that is that MMA is like a weird MMA.
What's reality? What's not? Who's
is that ethical?
Hurt?
They have these. Yes. Like, it's not pro wrestling. It's not fixed. But they do have like Conor McGregor is like one of the most charismatic people of all time. But then he goes and they fight. And is that should we be watching that? Should we basically be watching like gladiator battles in 2024? Like, I'm sure these people are like have many concussions and are.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. No. And I can't like there's lots of stuff that I am unable to watch because of that, like human cost. That's fascinating. I mean, I think that it's. You know, we consume a lot of content that's based on the emotions and the physical sacrifices and emotional sacrifices of real people. You know, sometimes those people are actors. Oftentimes they're not. Increasingly they're not. And I think that that is one of the central themes of Nathan Fielder's work. It sounds like it's of great interest to Benny Zofty as well. Grace, I'm curious about what you think. Like, the one of the last things I want to touch on is the fact that they chose to make this about an HGTV home development show that's set in New Mexico, that's like dealing with these themes of colonization and indigenous people and relationships to the land. Like, that is not necessarily the place where I would have thought Nathan Fielder was going to go next thematically, but seems like a very intentional choice. What do you make of that?
Well, I think the thing that's funny is I often was thinking about the finale, the way that the finale, it's probably Asher's shadow that we're all in now, because he flew into space, so he's casting a shadow on all of us. But it casts such a shadow on the rest of the show that it's almost what happened in the rest of the show?
Yeah.
But then when you dive into it, and the way that we were talking about, like, okay, what happened and why did it happen? All the stuff that came before it makes it like this. If like this was like 4 episodes and he flies into space, I don't know if I feel the exact same way. The show is so rich and thoughtful, and every week this is a show that we decided that we would go every scene and talk about. We've talked about every scene on the show.
Yeah.
Do that each episode. And when you look at the way that this was, I mean, you could have done it maybe in different places, but the theme of commercializing, doing good. And so Nathan is so, both of his shows have a reality TV component to them. And yet it's this perfect mix when you're doing reality TV. And that's what the rehearsal, I think, was so interesting, was the way in which it was fake, but it was actually real. And so that's, to me, where he lands with doing this HGTV show, which I think is so prime. I mean, there's been some really good satire. If you haven't watched the home flipping episode of What We Do in the Shadows, it's very, very funny, and has one of the greatest line reads in the history of television, just in case you need to know that. But it's ripe for satire. Like, all the stuff that they're pointing out, like, I sit and my parents love, HGTV is always on as just like the default channel at my house. But then when they're like, yeah, who did live in this house before? Like, it's like, that's a really good question. Yeah. And when you're like, so all,
and it's
stuff,
sort of like this very like saccharine kind of bland in a inoffensive, like, feel good, like, these are all feel good stories.
And there's legitimate like stars who have been born out of make home makeover and home design shows, right? So I think that when you and then so doing that all in the landscape of knowing, like, okay, but it's particularly like a community where there's a lot of indigenous people, and just getting to play in all that space where you have Whitney and Asher again wanting to be good but not willing to sacrifice anything that would make them more of a good person, right? So all the times in which like they would buy a home and rent it out for free knowing they still own it, rather than, or go give like a kid $100 rather than donate to the
homeless shelter,
right?
So
it was just, I think when they probably decided like what they would do, it was so ripe for the themes that I thought were so present. And then they kind of like put this, like, laid that on top with like the thing that the show is called, which is the curse, and the idea that you could or cannot. I mean, we never really find out if the chicken in the bathroom.
That is now
left to be, that legitimately could have been supernatural, that the chicken was removed from the pasta and placed in the firehouse bathroom. Wow. We don't know. So I just think
The firehouse, Grace, wouldn't it be wild if Whitney puts the baby in the baby box?
Oh my God. That would have been, I didn't even think about that.
That could happen. About like the fact of setting this in Española and making this about development. Like, I do think that there's something potentially like interesting about sort of drawing this line through colonialism and capitalism as this kind of logical conclusion, and the way that Whitney and these other, people who work for defense contractors and collect Native art, like, romanticize this place and this culture that's like so removed from the, their choices and the world that they inhabit. I think that there's something about that, about like using these, using these aesthetics as a way to sort of hide what you really, really stand for. And the fact that, like, you know, you can go to the art show and not get the art and, you know, try to honor this place without really understanding the place or understanding your role in changing the place and how that is kind of related to where we are in terms of our consumers of our where we are as consumers of media. I think that that's a potentially interesting link. But, like, again, we said this earlier in our coverage, like, I think that this is such, I don't think that there's enough of our art that's like grappling with our relationship as Americans, Canadians, North Americans, like with our past, with our history of colonialism and with our current neocolonialism. Like, so I do think that that was really, really felt really, really fresh and important about the show. And we're getting a little bit of that with True Detective Night Country as well.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I think I loved it. I loved the way that the show layered itself. I mean, we came on and talked, and I think that's too, where a little bit, like, I just thought from the beginning, it was so well designed and what it was saying. We were talking about the way it's talking about race and class in America in a way that was so smart. And then it just surprised us as it kept going, of like being this such a weird show, ultimately culminating in a man flying into space. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, again, you know, I said this when we first came on to do the recap, and, you know, it's just increasingly rare the television, like, truly surprises you, even in shows that do a great job and stick the landing. Like, I just finished watching Fargo season 5. I thought it was fantastic. I thought the finale was great. I might, you know, I might forget about that show in another year or two. I will never forget the finale of The Curse. Like, it's, you know, there's, we've seen so much, like, it's hard to surprise an audience. This was genuinely surprising in a way that, like, I know it felt like a tonal shift. I know it felt like a thing apart from what the rest of the series was, but I still think it was artistically successful and it worked. And, you know, it's just great to dig into it and have the opportunity to talk about it.
You're not a What We Do in the Shadows watcher, I presume?
No, I watched, like, I checked out a couple of episodes and it didn't hook me, but maybe I'll go back because I've heard very good things.
Well, can I tell you that there's a season in which a character gets basically reincarnated as a baby version of themselves.
Yeah.
And they are CGI'd onto, and they grow over the course of the season, and they are continually CGI'd to be the baby, toddler, child version of themselves. Uh-huh. I was pretty sure we were never going to get The Curse season 2, but now I've talked myself into CGI baby Nathan Fielder.
What? Oh my goodness gracious.
Oh my goodness gracious. Yeah.
Oh,
I know.
My goodness gracious. Wow. I mean, Nathan Fielder has worked with, like, accelerated aging before in his previous work.
This is true. This is true. Yeah. What if he hires that kid to play the baby? Anyway, I don't think we're getting a season 2, right? That's it. That's one and done on The Curse.
I don't think so, but, like, I'm crap at predicting what's going to come next in these shows. So, I mean, I don't put anything past this creative team.
Yeah. We'll see. I'd be interested. Doesn't seem like there's rumblings of it, though. It doesn't seem like they're like, okay, it got renewed. The fact that they haven't seemed to done any press is like, maybe they're going to pretend like they never did it. Is that the next bit? Like, we didn't make the curve.
I mean, one of the things, like, to just like speak to the Andy Kaufman-esque, like, I mean, almost everything that these two have done publicly since the show came out has been a gag.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, they've been in some kind of character this whole time. So that will be interesting to see if they sort of break out of that and have earnest discussions about the show. Like, I would lap all of that up, but I also wouldn't be surprised if we don't see that from them. If this is, like, part of the, you know, if they become Tony Liptons from here on out and we never see them in their true form again.
Yeah. Well, we should see. Well, hopefully they'll see us in our true form once again. But in the meantime,
detectiving truly.
Yeah, we're talking True Detective. It's a thing. We could both pick a plug this together. It's been very good so far.
Yeah.
A very good season. Yeah.
So you can keep up with the other things that I'm doing. I'm on PSR, True Detective with Grace, only one small part of the extensive True Detective coverage we're bringing you here on the network. And it's you know, it's definitely a show that is worthy of that. So that's really exciting. And I'm also covering 6 Feet Under on a rewatch with Ariel. We're having so much fun revisiting this show. It's really such a delight. We're in season 2 now. That's coming to you weekly. And I also just will be appearing on the upcoming episode of Renap on Rob Has a Podcast, interviewing Rob and Akiva, asking the hard-hitting questions.
Wow.
They didn't watch The Curse. I asked them that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think... Akiva, maybe Rob, no, right? Was that...
I think he started it and he didn't keep up with it. I would be curious.
Akiva didn't keep up with it, or Rob didn't keep up with it?
Rob started it. Akiva did not. And
this
Rob
is my opinion of how much, whether or not they should watch it based on whether or not they think they should, would like it, which is, I think yes. Akiva might like it and Rob, I think, will probably hate it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would love to hear what they thought about it. That would be,
I would also love to hear what they thought about it. Yeah. Well, the other things I have, Post Show Recaps Theater with Ariel. Last week, you talked to Mean Girls, the musical. And this week, will be an episode on the International Space Station movie, ISS. And then Jess and I are on Full Spoiler Recaps, are chatting Slow Horses this week, another Apple TV favorite with Gary Oldman. I think, Amanda, that's it for coverage here of The Curse. I was thinking, I almost did try to think earlier today, like, could I do a very surreal Andy Kaufman bit? And I couldn't think of it. So if something drops in people's feed, you should expect that it's just completely just a bit. And I don't know what it will be, but that's what was my thought.
Maybe we should just release like the Mighty Mouse song.
That would be
podcast.
Pretty good. You might now hear that at the end of this podcast, just so everyone knows. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Until next time. Bye-bye.